through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
All right, before we bring in Mike Lowers here, we do have breaking news. According to multiple sources, the Pac-12 has canceled the fall football season. Quote, we're done, a source said. The league will attempt to play in the spring. We'll see if that actually happens, if things are better enough for in the spring, or if it's even logistically feasible to do it that way. I was talking with some people on Twitter last night about how what you were saying, Jake, like, would the athletes even have enough time for their bodies to recuperate in between spring and summer 21 for guys who are going back to play more college football or guys going into the NFL? I think that that could be crazy talk, but we'll see. Either way, the news of the day, Pac-12 has canceled the fall football season, and we'll get back to that in about 10 minutes. Right now, we bring in Mike Blowers. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Terrific after such a Mariner win. Things are coming together for a lot of these guys that are part of the plan for the future, and it's really great to watch. I want to ask you a question from a former player's perspective, though, because what the Rangers tried last night, opening up that roof to see if that would help them hit. When you're playing, we'll say early season baseball, and it's cold or it's hot in Texas or whatever, and you're at the plate, do you know that that's something that you can take advantage of?
Yes. I think that there's a lot of things you can take advantage of if you're an offensive player. The first thing when players come out to stretch on game day, and the first thing they're going to do is look at the flags. What are the flags doing? Are they blowing out? Are they blowing in? Left or right? Do I have to hit the ball the other way? They pay attention to all of that. And the one thing that we all know is when you go into Texas in the old ballpark and there was no roof, the ball's going to fly. You can't help it, right? It's going to be 90-plus degrees, and just try to find something that you can get in the air and take advantage of it. So I'm sure the guys, even though it's hot, it's really hot, but they started at 8 o'clock in Texas last night, so it couldn't have been too bad. They'll take that and let the ball fly. Pitchers probably didn't like it too much.
Mike, what is it about a big win like this that, one, is obviously fun, but what about these types of games that you see the Mariners come through and win is most enjoyable to you as you're watching these players develop?
I think there's a couple of things, Jake. I think if you go back to the day before when Sheffield was on the mound and just how dominant he was, I thought that was a lot of fun to watch just because he's going to be a big part of your future. And you had a glimpse of what this could possibly be when he gets it all figured out and commands the strike zone. And when he has a day that he's able to do that, you can really see it. Yesterday was fun just because it was really, and it rarely happens, but it was a team win across the board. And what I mean by that is everybody in the lineup got a hit. So they were all part of it. Dunn goes out and gets his first major league win, pitches six innings, first time he's done that. The bullpen does their thing, and so when the game is over, you get into the clubhouse, it's awesome because everybody feels good about what their day was. There's some other times when you play every day and the team might win a game 3-2, but you were 0-4 and you had an opportunity to maybe make a difference and make it an easier win and you didn't. Even though you're happy you won, you know there's things to work on and there's things for you to do. I think yesterday is just one of those rare days where everybody got to enjoy that W across the board because they all contributed to it. So that's kind of the difference between the two, but it's a lot of fun.
Hey, Mike, earlier in our show, I said that one of the best things about the season, for Mariners fans at least, is that the stuff you thought would be bad, like the bullpen or maybe rookies like Evan White actually at the plate, were understandably bad. And then the things you thought were good were even better. Is there anything that doesn't fit with that trend in your mind? Because I also don't want to oversimplify it.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think that, you know, our first game that we did, the first thing that we showed, or the second thing that we showed, was that this was the youngest team in Major League Baseball. And when you see that, you understand, I think, immediately, or at least you should, that this is going to be a process, and at times it's going to be really difficult, and maybe at times it's even going to be bad. I would say, though, that I think they've hung in there pretty good, and we've actually seen more positives than negatives across the board, which is kind of encouraging to me. And probably I feel that way more so just because of the last two outings of Sheffield and Dunn, right? I mean, you got a six-man rotation. You have these two guys that have had a difficult time. And by the way, I love your guys' chant, get through the fourth. I think that's hilarious. But I think that, yeah, it's great. But these guys are on their path now, and their pitch counts are up to where you would hope that it's not always going to happen, but they'll be more consistent along the board. So I would say, I don't know if it answers your question, but I would say there are more positives than any of the negatives across. So for me, I think that is pretty good, especially since you're about a third of the way through the season.
Mike, I read Kyle Lewis was talking about how coming up at the end of last year and playing for that month or whatever it was, a couple of weeks there, really helped him and got him ahead of the game for this year. Do you, with that said, I know not everybody's the same, but do you think that that might be a good idea for a guy like Jared Kelnick too? Maybe he doesn't play a whole month, but at least getting him sometime by the end of the season, think that'd be a smart idea for him?
I think that at this point, I'm not sure that's the case. I think that you have a number of guys that are probably going to be a part of the mix going into next year that you have to be really careful. And do you want to start that clock with these guys? And there's a lot of things that go into it. And they're really not having a regular minor league season where you can see the progressions of them moving forward. They're playing, what, four times a week in Tacoma against each other. They're getting six or seven at-bats in a game. It's just completely different. So I don't know necessarily if that's the case. And when you mentioned Kelnick, this kid's really confident. I don't know that he necessarily is going to need that. I'm a big proponent of exposing guys to the big leagues before you expect them to be there every day, but he might be one of the exceptions to the rule. I don't know. I know that Jerry DePoto and his staff, they have a plan for all those guys, Logan Gilbert and everybody. It's just such a strange season. I think it's different than what you would see if it was 162 and those guys were playing a regular minor league season. He'd probably be in Double A right now, going through the paces, and then you'd call him up in September. But this year is just completely different from that. So I don't know what the plan is, but I think I'd be surprised if I saw those types of guys, the big prospects, coming up at any point this year.
Mike, we talk about Kyle Lewis, and obviously he has been an absolute star so far this season. But one of the other players that has really caught my eye in terms of their development has been J.P. Crawford. You watch his development last year, struggling, and then starting to turn it around at the latter part of the year last year, and you see him playing with his glove and his bat. I mean, how impressive is that to you, and how much hope does that give you that he can be a staple of this clubhouse for the future?
Yeah, I think that's a great point because I think more than anything, he's going to have to be a leader on this team. And look, he was exposed to the big leagues before he came over to the Mariners organization. But when he came up last year, I think the best thing that happened to him was Perry Hill. And the reason why is because he worked him every single day, and I'm including day games. And when you are 120 games into your schedule and you're beat and you're tired of the travel and you just, on a day game, most other organizations are going to give those guys the day off. Just show up, get your uni on, stretch, throw, let's get out there and play. Perry had him out there working. And the reason why is because he wanted to instill a certain discipline into him. And the great thing about it is JP bought in. He bought in across the board. And now he's seeing the benefits of that. And I think when you have a player that does that, and he's a young player, and he has a little more time than the rest of the younger guys, and they see his work ethic and the way he goes about his business, and then they see it pay off onto the field, I think that's really, really, really big for the rest of the younger guys on the team. When you talk about Shed Long, Kyle Lewis, all of the other, Evan White, all the guys that are trying to find their way, and they can see this, and he's a little bit further ahead of them, but they see the way he goes about his business, I think is big.
Just real quick on J.P. Crawford. I noticed last night, he made a really nice snag when they were aligned in a shift. So he was almost playing second base, basically. Do they practice that? Because he's used to the ball coming at him from a certain direction at shortstop. Does he practice that on the other side just to prepare for that situation?
Probably. I know the play was a terrific play, and it was a reaction for him. And I would say that they probably don't practice that. But the one thing that they started doing when the shifts became vogue, everybody was doing it, is in spring training, they would put guys into the shift, even though they had no idea what this minor league kid who was in the game in the sixth inning, a random game, was going to do, just to get them used to it. And then when you go on the backfields in the morning, they would put him out there for that. But I think that the play that he made last night was just a strict reaction on his part. Gives you an idea how athletic he is, but he just reacted to that. But they try the best that they can, but they're not going to have him diving for balls out there in a shift or anything like that. And you can't simulate that kind of exit velocity. I think it was well over 100 miles an hour when it came off the bat. That was clearly just him reacting to it.
Mike, terrific talking to you. We will talk to you next week. Thanks so much.
Hey, Tom, can I ask Jake a question real quick?
I like how he asked me permission. Sure, go ahead.
I'm excited.
Okay, well, I was just thinking about it because you guys were talking about the college football stuff, and I was wondering because we went to a six-man rotation because they were worried about the workload for these pitchers after starting spring training, having the time off, a short season, and then going into next year, basically trying to prepare them for next year, which these guys won't throw 200 innings again next year. Now, thinking about these college kids, Jake, these guys aren't playing, and it's football, and it's a physical sport, and you can't go out and practice that. What happens then if they're off for another 6 months or even a year?
It's a fantastic question, Mike, because for these kids, it then goes to the question of, are they allowed to be on campus or not? Because one of the arguments is that you look at student athletes, and are they allowed to be on campus safely? Are they really amateur athletes if students are told to be at home and go to school at home, yet you have athletes working at the facility and conducting business and lifting and doing all those things? So there's that argument. And then the other side, if they are sent home, Mike, it's extremely difficult. You can try and work through private trainers to continue to work out and continue to train, but there's only so much that you can do. And it is going to be really tough on these kids developmentally to figure that out. And then also, what is the ramp up period going to look like? There's all these factors into it, Mike, that it's really interesting to see how they're going to try and put this all together, not to mention possibly trying to play in the spring, then turn that right back around and try and play a few months later in the fall to start everything next year. It's going to be really hard on their bodies, Mike.
Yeah, I can imagine. Good talking to you guys.
Bye, Mike.
Take care, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
So evidently, I'm the gatekeeper to you two guys in case any of our guests want to ask
many people will want to ask me questions, too, I'm sure.
Jake and Blow, they go back years.
They don't.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, we do.
I'm Mike's favorite. I am.
He'll ask you a question someday. It's all right. Today
our competition over guests has gotten out of control. We're determined to rack up the most favorites.
All right, guys, we got to get into this. We got to get into this. Okay. Like, it's serious business. Yep. Okay, we have no college football in the Pac-12. It's not officially yet, but we have source after source after source tweeting out that the fall Pac-12 season has been canceled. They're going to look at it in the springtime and see what they can do, just like the Big Ten announced that they would do. By the way, in case you missed that, they've also canceled their fall season. But is it any different when the reality of it comes down? Because yesterday we talked about this basically wall-to-wall, the entire show, just speculating that it may happen. Okay, what if it's this? What if it's that? Now that it has, I mean, what's next for the conference? Do you think we're going to see some of these teams? Like we saw Nebraska announce, okay, well, we may try to figure out how to play in the SEC or with the Big 12 or wherever. You think we'll see any Pac-12 teams try to do that, Jake?
I honestly have no idea, Tom. I fully believe that once you say you postpone to the spring, although ratings would probably be high in the spring, I just don't see it happening. I feel that this is just a restart. Hey, we're not doing it this year, and let's restart, and let's think of the athletes here. that you're saying that you're looking out for, and let's restart this for the next season. Because you're going to put these athletes in really difficult positions professionally, professional aspirations, physically. What does the ramp-up period look like? These are all questions that are going to be formulated. And the one thing that I have a hard time with is there are sources that are being leaked out that with the Big 12, with this conversation, it started as a hypothetical just a mere couple days ago. Now it's turning into postponement. Therefore, there is no plan in place as to how they're going to handle things moving forward. Are you kidding me? You're going to make a decision of this magnitude, and you have no idea what you're going to do for these student athletes. So what are the coaches supposed to say? What are the athletics directors supposed to tell these kids? Well, sorry, we don't have the answers right now. We don't know if you're going to go home. We don't know if you're going to stay on campus. We have no plan for you. How about come together with a plan before you make a decision of this magnitude? It just baffles me.
And it looks like the Pac-12 has tweeted out an official statement. So even though we're going to have that press conference at 1:30, we will not be carrying it. It is a media press conference, but we'll be giving you guys updates. It looks like the Pac-12 has officially released that statement. So more updates to come, but the big answer you were waiting for is here. The Pac-12 is postponing fall sports. I think what makes people so upset about it too, and Jake, I'm right in your corner with this one, it's that even if you were going to play the season in a pandemic and that was going to make it impossible with the structure of college football as it is now. Okay. I can understand that. I can empathize with the fact that you had to call off your season for medical concerns or liability concerns or money-making concerns, whatever it is, whether you agree with the take or not, the pandemic has made many other things difficult, and it makes sense that one of those would also be college football and college sports. I think what makes people so upset is that it really does feel like they waited until the last minute to do this, despite the fact that we went into quarantine in March and you had the better part of the spring and summer to get together and meet. And it feels like they're just now meeting to discuss this. That's way too late. So you telling me that you're going to be playing in spring means nothing if what I'm taking from it is that you're going to meet in April to decide what you're going to do.
The meeting between the schools and the conferences, that seemed like it took way too long. But didn't Reese Davis, when he was on with this yesterday, ESPN's Reese Davis, wasn't he talking about how the universities themselves have been looking at this situation really since COVID started, trying to figure out what to do? Like, I don't think that the schools themselves sat there, were necessarily negligent in the same way the conference was, if that makes sense. Like, maybe they didn't come together properly, but as far as figuring out what they're going to do with
their students. You're saying the officials, like the people at the top, waited way too long, but schools had done their own planning?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. The second COVID hit and kids went home from school at every level, right? College, high school, elementary. That was the point at which the universities had to start dealing with this, and they have not stopped dealing with it, right? Sports are part of that, but their first concern is to the students. That includes both athletes and non-athletes. So if that's what led to them putting off what was going to happen with their sports, I mean, unfortunately, and I'll just go devil's advocate, the unknowns of COVID, Jake, are just something that everybody has to deal with, and there's not much you can do about it.
Okay, but the problem I have with that right there is the unknowns. We have no idea what the unknowns are even going to look like. There are lots of possibilities, lots of potential complications, but the data has shown that they are minimal in the sense that I don't mean minimal in the sense that, you know, people could die. I mean minimal in the sense of percentage points. The other implications, myocarditis, is that what this is, Stacey? Is that myocarditis is another thing that was linked to this as a potential unknown effect of COVID. And you have medical experts, Dr. John McKnight from the University of Virginia, who is part of the leading aspects of studying this. He says the likelihood that the individual goes on to have myocardial complication is very low with healthy athletes who have, you know, that show no symptoms, which is the majority of college football. So all of these unknowns are being wrapped into one. My question is, a vaccine is going to help, but it's not going to cure it altogether. So when does the question of the unknown stop? Is it always going to be there? What is the effect of that? What does that look like going forward? To me, that's the hard part that I have with that is, are we always going to talk about the unknown and not be able to have a regular college football season because of those unknowns?
Well, hopefully, Jake, the unknowns, like that list, becomes smaller and smaller as research is done on the virus, right? I mean, at this point, there's the question of, well, we don't know what we don't know. There could be a million different things, I suppose. But look, it's different for college than it is for professional leagues. It just is, because it's not just the virus itself and what would it do to athletes when they're on the field. It's, okay, well, if we're putting them on campus, why not the rest of the students and so forth? And we've been through the litany of all that. So they have problems other than the virus itself and how it affects the players to deal with, and that's what's really complicating it.
I want to keep this conversation going too, because Jake, I think the point that you bring up, and Tom, you as well, are ones that fans have, particularly if a conference like the SEC still plays. People are going to be wondering, well, what made the Pac-12 and Big Ten cancel that didn't make the SEC cancel? Clearly, one conference either didn't react enough, or one conference overreacted, or what? I think there's a lot that goes into that. I do want to give a quick update from the Pac-12. They've since released a statement. I think there's an interesting thing in here I want you to know. So first, they say the Pac-12 CEO group voted unanimously to postpone all sports competitions through the end of the 2020 calendar year. The decision was made after consultation with athletic directors and the Pac-12 COVID-19 Medical Advisory Committee. So they expressed concern with moving forward with contact practice, which was their big concern. This is interesting, though. The conference also announced that when conditions improve, it would consider a return to competition for impacted sports after January 1st, 2021. So it may not be the spring. It could be that after the start of the 2021 new year, they look at whether or not fall sports, and I think at this point that would also include basketball, can safely continue.
What about the crew team? Where are they going to row in the middle of January?
A great question, Tom. A great question.
Oh, man.
Maybe rowing through ice makes you stronger.
Well, I would think, in the freezing cold weather. I think Jake needs like a 5-minute timeout here to collect his thoughts, because he's hopping mad over this, and I don't blame him. College, nothing is closer to his heart than college football. I mean, yeah. For anybody who played the sport, obviously. So we'll come back with the halftime show, and we'll get more into this next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Quick reminder, Seahawks training camp is here, and it's time for 2-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle, starting August 17th. Join us each weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable from 11 a.m. to noon, featuring John Clayton and our Seahawks experts, and then your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon on Instagram Live. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all-access pass to Seahawks training camp with 2-a-days starting August 17th. Big news of the day, and this was expected, unfortunately. The Pac-12 has canceled all fall sports. They will revisit the issue coming up in January to see if any of them are doable in the spring. I guess we'll have to wait on that conversation. But for now, Pac-12 fall sports gone. Big Ten did the same thing this morning. There's a lot of tentacles to this story, but just to go through a couple of them again. This issue of eligibility that's going to be maintained for players who are opting out anyway. I guess the opt-out doesn't really matter if there's no season. But for kids who are not able to play, how they're going to be able to include those kids next season and deal with the incoming freshman class, I have no idea. And what are you going to increase just in football alone? I mean, it's going to affect every sport. But in football alone, what are you going to do? Like, increase the roster size to, like, 110? How do they do that, Jake?
They don't. They're going to pick and choose. I mean, that's the reality, is everybody that thinks that they can opt out and that their scholarship will actually be honored, they run into two problems that they have to figure out. Is either A, are they going to honor that sophomore, junior, or senior scholarship, or do they take away the scholarship of the incoming freshman that they just gave to? So those are going to be, you know, really tough decisions that universities are going to have, and I think that that's a problem that they're not really accounting for, because that's more financial burden onto the university and just not a realistic one that they're going to be able to uphold. They don't have 130 lockers in a locker room right now. They're not going to add those. So something's got to give in that situation. And I think that that's why I have a hard time with the decisions, is ultimately, if you're going to cancel, okay, but what's your plan? And they don't have a plan. It's documented. It's, you know, well-sourced. They don't have a plan as to what they're going to do moving forward.
Yeah, I still feel like it's hard to blame the structure of college sports, while I disagree with so much of it, for struggling in a pandemic. I do feel like there should have been more planning with this. And I think that that planning and the conversations that could have happened would have helped them decide where they stand on different risks. It feels like a lot of this is being influenced far more recently. I am going to say, this is reading, the Pac-12 released essentially a PDF of the guidance, the medical guidance that they used for whether or not they could return to sporting activity. So this was obviously last updated yesterday. So I'm going to say three quick things from it. With their current assessment, they decided that the following were medical concerns that they had at this time. So these are their three biggest concerns. One, community prevalence remains very high in much of the Pac-12, and they were very concerned about traveling to places that might be more unsafe, particularly on a commercial aircraft. The second issue was that they were concerned about health outcomes related to the virus. Among those was the potential serious cardiac side effects. The one Jake mentioned was from an ESPN report. I believe it's, what did I say it was? Myocarditis or something, which is a heart issue associated with the after effects of a viral infection. The third was that they felt testing capacity needs to increase to allow for more frequent testing. So, for whatever reason, it sounds like they didn't have the access to testing or the capacity and volume of testing that they would have wanted. So those are the three big issues they listed in their assessment of why they felt it was unsafe at this time to participate in fall sports.
You know, one of these conferences is going to end up, I think, with egg on their face, because let's just say that the SEC or one conference goes ahead and actually plays their season and nothing happens, like nothing goes wrong. The other conferences are going to be like, oh man, we could have gotten away with the season, the SEC or whoever just showed us that. Or the SEC might play and have some kids get sick. Hopefully nothing too serious, but they may have kids get sick and they're going to look like fools for doing it. One way or the other, fingers are going to be pointed.
Yeah, that's for sure. Fingers are going to be pointed, and we'll see what happens. It's all unknown.
Next.
Music already started.
Oh, I didn't even hear it.
Pew, 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 pew. That's the new one.
Mariners won last night. That should pick everybody's spirits up. They won big, too. The Rangers... Their plan was to play in their new stadium with the roof closed because it's so darn hot down there in Texas. for years the players have complained about that. So they have a nice air-conditioned building, and the fans that would have been there probably would have enjoyed it a lot more. But they tried to open the roof to see if that would jumpstart the Ranger offense, and it did not. But it did help the Mariner offense. We got home runs from Kyle Lewis, Kyle Seager, Dylan Moore. Away the Mariners went with a rout win. And Justin Dunn, he got his first win. He pitched into the seventh inning. So terrific win last night. Everything that we need to be going well for the Mariners is going well. Is there anybody that's part of the plan moving forward that's not contributing right now? I'm not even sure I consider Vogelbach
I was going to say he would be the one, he or Malik Smith, although I like Malik Smith. I think both of them have been struggling. I mean, again, we're only across how many games, and so it's hard to say, like, this guy's average is low. But of all the guys in the lineup that are younger that might be part of the plan, I'd say those two. But I think the ones that this team might be the most focused on are playing well. And for Evan White, I think that the team, at least from what we can gather from our own conversations with Aaron Goldsmith and Rick Riz, had an idea that Evan White would struggle at the plate, especially initially, just to acclimate to the big leagues. But his defense has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's certainly fun.
Sorry, Jake. I don't know if there's a delay between me and you or something. I keep saying next because I don't hear you talking. And then all of a sudden you jump in and start talking. I apologize.
All good. All good.
Okay. The third pass catcher on this team. Who in the heck is that going to be? And does it have to necessarily be one person? Jake, you said earlier that you thought the Seahawks would be best off if blank was their third leading receiver.
Greg Olsen. If Greg Olsen is their third leading receiver, to me that's a great sign. Obviously, you hope the production is there, but if he's your third leading receiver, that means there's tremendous chemistry between him and Russell Wilson. That means that the Seahawks offense is utilizing him in the proper ways that I hope that they do, that they allow him to bring some of the unique talent that he has to this offense and display that a little bit more from what they've shown over the last couple seasons. And if you can have Greg Olsen along with Will Disley, Philip Dorsett, who I'm very, very high on, and then possibly with the addition of Josh Gordon, I think that you've got a very, very exciting skill position group as an offense.
I feel like my answer is really similar to Jake's. So instead, I'm going to point to maybe our last question, because someone on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line just texted in an answer that I didn't even consider. And I think that's very telling. The 206 says, what about Mitch Haniger? I didn't even consider Mitch Haniger because he hasn't been a part of this team. I mean, you've been we knew he was injured in the before times, before we went in quarantine, and we heard, oh, he'll hopefully come back in May or so, and then that gets pushed back, and that gets pushed back, and now he's on the 45-day IL list. Has that changed since then, Curtis? Do you know? I might be catching you off guard.
Stayed the exact same.
Okay. So, I mean, it's just weird. He hasn't been a part of anything. He didn't even come to mind. But I would certainly consider him, at least I would have considered him a part of their long-term plan.
I think they still have use for a right fielder. I think they can still, there's no reason to give up on him.
No.
Yet. I mean, you can't trade him, obviously, when he's hurt like this. So give old Mitchie a chance. All right, coming up next, we got a good old-fashioned Twitter spat. Actually, you know what? This isn't just a Twitter spat. This is an all-out feud between Skip Bayless and one NBA player. Talk about that next in the timeline. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome in to The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, reading you the top stories you're going to need to know that'll be on your own Twitter timelines. If you've already seen them, congrats. We'll give you the latest updates. If you haven't, we're going to blow your mind. I'm going to get started with some not great news. Now, we've already heard that the Pac-12 has officially postponed sports through 2020. The entire conference has done this. The most recent updates, again, from my timeline. This from our own Jessamyn McIntyre. ASU AD Ray Anderson said, it's about accountability, not liability. We have responsibilities and accountability. The science and the medicine says we cannot allow you to go forward right now. That tended to be a theme with a couple of the athletic directors, that this wasn't about liability. It was about health and accountability. So clearly, I'm going to guess part of that discussion they had was about really stressing that they were trying to focus on player health and not trying to avoid any kind of health issues or liability connected to that. So that's what's on the timeline. We also have for you right now Larry Scott's opening messages from the press conference.
But we're here today to announce the Pac-12 CEO group has decided to postpone all sport competition through the end of the 2020 calendar year. This decision was made after consultation with athletics directors, our coaches, football working groups, and with the Pac-12 COVID-19 Medical Advisory Committee, who expressed concern with moving forward with contact practice. After reviewing all the data and considering the alternatives, and having already delayed the start of our season and compressed our season, the CEO group was unanimous that this decision was necessary.
Well, guys,
you know, one thing that just occurred to me, I'm glad that they consulted with some medical professionals. I was afraid that he wasn't going to say that, because that was the last group that he listed there. But you got to take what you hear from medical professionals with a grain of salt, because anytime, like, say you have a serious injury, right? And you go to a doctor and you say, hey, doc, like, I got this injury. Do you think I should be playing football or wrestling or skydiving or whatever it is anymore? Of course the doctor's going to tell you no, because they're doctors. That's their job to do that. And people who are on a COVID medical advisory board, it's their job to tell you, no, you should not be doing this across the board. So I don't know what they expected to hear from them, but it wasn't going to be an answer like, oh, yeah, you know what? COVID's not that bad. Go ahead and play. Of course, that's what they were going to hear from them.
Well, that's true. But I think that it's a weird line. To me, I don't have a problem with them canceling the season because of reasons. I believe that they could have made this work, that they could have made this successful. To me, the number one thing that I think really stands out here is the lack of testing that they had. They're not testing in the same way that professional sports are in terms of daily, every other day testing. I think that's an issue that probably then leads them to wonder, okay, if we get into, you know, padded practices, we get into games, we're not testing these kids enough to ensure our own student athletes and other schools' student athletes that they aren't positive as they're playing. I think that's probably the number one concern, which I understand. My problem is, if you had these concerns all along, how do you not have things in place now and ready to go as an alternative plan as to what you're going to do, how you're going to go about it? You know, what is the reality of postponing it to the spring? Is that even real? And I think the Pac-12 is being more realistic in this situation. They're saying they're going to reevaluate it in January, but I don't see how this changes by the time January rolls around. Let's just call it a clean slate and let's move on to the next year. In my opinion, I just don't see it's likely that they'll be able to pull this off in the springtime and then still advocate for player safety when you're forcing these kids to play two seasons back in just a few months' time, reacting. So there's a lot of questions that I have right now as to how they're going to proceed moving forward. Are the student athletes going to remain on campus? Are they not? If they do remain on campus, you still have a lot of these underlying questions about, are they really amateur athletes or not? I don't know. There's just a lot. There's a lot of tentacles here as this conversation moves along.
Yeah, that last one's the biggest to me, because I think that the structure of college sports, like just the number, the sheer size of college sports, the number of schools, and that's only in the Power 5 conferences, much less Division 2 or 3, but just the number of schools, the number of players makes it very difficult to avoid any kind of infections or spreads of any virus among locker rooms. But I think that the structure of college sports as it is and relates to amateurism, with insisting that athletes are not employees and they're students, and therefore you've got to treat them like other students, and you've got to pretend that they're like on campus like other students and just show up to this fun football club you're hosting. I think that, you know, the NCAA has also backed itself into a little bit of a corner with this, because now they can't create special protocols and they can't create a bubble and they can't do some of the things that you might be able to get away with if you were technically a company, right? Like, you can't make the athletes do things that professional people would normally have to do. So we're going to continue this conversation. I want to get to at least one other story with the timeline, just because we've got some lighter stuff here. Oh, I forgot to tell you guys that Hard Knocks apparently premieres tonight. I completely forgot that. Yay! I believe it's the Rams and the Chargers, correct?
Chargers.
Both Los Angeles teams. So just as an aside, another story. Dame Lillard got called out by Skip Bayless on Twitter and then shot back. So Skip Bayless, this is after Lillard missed two free throws, said, "I'm still not buying, quote, Dame time, and apparently the Clippers aren't either." And then he promotes Undisputed, some new segment he was going to have there, presumably about Dame Lillard. Lillard retweeted that and called Skip out. He said, "I've never been buying nothing about you, fam. You a joke. And after our private convo full of backpedaling, you will never have my respect." Clown emoji. Whew. Fire.
What I'm reading in there is that the two of them at some point did have a private conversation where Lillard says that Bayless was like, "Oh man, it's okay. Like, I didn't mean any
of
that."
Totally cool in
person. Or something like that.
Yes.
Right. And now he calls him out again, Bayless does. And now Lillard's like, "Hey man, I just talked to you. You backpedaled. Now you're calling me out again. Now you'll never have my respect." Like, yeah, obviously. By the way, what does the word fam mean? He says,
"Family.
I've never been buying nothing about you, fam." What's that mean?
What do you mean, fam? Like, what is
fam?
What
does
that
word
mean? It's short for family.
But why
like
is he using it in that context?
Well, because he's being facetious.
Oh. Yeah.
Is that something everybody knows except me?
Yeah, Tom. I didn't
want
to be
that. That I'm about to get mad about?
Yeah. You might just
Keep up, Tom. Keep up with this slang, the new generation, okay?
Tom, why don't you throw it a break and we'll explain more just kind of like modern usages of words during the break. We'll get you caught up.
I'm on Twitter 24 hours a day.
Tom.
If I don't see it, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
Come on, fam. Let's go to break.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. We'll go to break. Now, here's a statement and a half. There are some people inside the Seahawk fam that think that Jamal Adams is better than both Cam and Earl. What? 710 ESPN Seattle.